Today is Thursday. It's July 27th, 2017. It's 11:10 in the morning. I'm John Williams. This is The Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record at the studios of WGN Radio. Portions of this are broadcast on my Saturday morning show about 11:10 a.m. on WGN.
And I'm Scott Stantz, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. Thank you for the intro music there, Eric.
Nice.
Just walk up.
Very zen.
Zorn.
Also the creator of the comic strip Prickly City and the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN+.
And I'm Krista McQuarrie, the rebellious member of the Chicago Tribune editorial board. I'm told, with my wardrobe choice today.
Oh. And I'm Eric Zorn, the beleaguered columnist from the Tribune. I run Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays.
Still, and by the way, are you going to start to use a nickname now, the way Zorn sort of self-identifies?
I hate to steal his thing. Zorn's it's his thunder. But
or Zornism, as we like to call them.
Well, yes. But actually, that's a Trumpism, because beleaguered is the way the president's been describing the attorney general. And I didn't know if that was him saying, leave my guy alone. I think I know the answer to this now. But at first, I didn't know exactly what he was saying. Or was he saying he's overwhelmed, he's ineffectual, and he's beleaguered?
He's beleaguering him himself. The reason that Sessions is beleaguered is because Trump is beleaguering him.
Well, he's come to that for sure. Mm-hmm. But at first, I didn't know. Like the Amazon Washington Post, I thought, okay, what? I get the connection. Bezos owns one and runs the other. But why put the two together? We know you don't like Washington Post, but now are you going to try and pollute Amazon? Do you not want Amazon to succeed?
Yeah, apparently Amazon's a very weak, badly regarded brand. Wait, mm-hmm.
Within the Trump administration, or because I think people.
I guess his hair product didn't come in the same day. Maybe that's
why do we try to get into his head? I don't know. I don't even know if he knows what beleaguered means. I think he meant he's got baggage or something. Sessions has baggage and is weighing down the administration in some way. But I agree with Eric. I mean,
he's the one who's doing it. You know,
He's the one who's doing it.
The Amazon Washington Post thing, I read that as a bit of a shot across the bow to Bezos and Amazon, because, you know, they're dealing with legislation having to do with taxation of internet products and so on. So he wants
the Washington Post to back down, or else it's going to be hard for Amazon.
I heard a little bit of a knuckle crack in that.
Of course. It's always a knuckle crack with this guy. Always.
Okay.
With Jeff Sessions, he's also losing. I listened to him, and he, in fact, he was the senator from Alabama. And so you listen to those people, and they're starting to, like, really become disenchanted with Donald Trump, which is fascinating to watch, because they're going, well, you know, they should just take away his Twitter account and keep him out of a camera. I'm going, that's why you voted for him, because of this BS that he continues to spew.
I mean, Jeff Sessions is to conservatives what someone like Elizabeth Warren or Kamala Harris would be to Democrats. Like, all of a sudden, the president from your own party is crapping all over this person who has been out in front of these issues. And, you know, I don't agree with Jeff Sessions about just about anything, I would guess, but he's been out in front on these issues and leading the way on the conservative side for many years. And Trump is willing to flick him away because he was unable to protect Trump from this investigation. A completely selfish motive on his part. I've been hearing this in his remarks from the senators in Washington, the Republican senators. They are not happy about this.
Yeah. In the arc of this is that, if people may forget, that Sessions is the first major politician, the U.S. senator, to come out and endorse Trump. He's been a Trump toady from day one. It's been, I mean, and so for Sessions to be the one to be thrown under the bus on this one is, you know, it's just emblematic of the man, I think.
Kristen, do you think Sessions should have seen this? Because he gave up a comfortable seat. Now what's his future, right? Suppose he does get fired.
GoFundMe.
I mean, I'm sure he'll be able to pay his bills, but there you go. You just walked away from a comfortable Senate seat.
There's no way he could have predicted all of this. I mean, Trump appointed him in November, shortly after the election, or chose him, and then he went through his confirmation process. And then in March, with the advice of fellow people at Justice and conservative Republican senators and just about everyone, said he was going to recuse himself because anything related to Russia and the campaign, he might be. So he did the right thing by stepping aside from that investigation. And then months later, you have Trump trashing him and basically saying, yeah, you know, I picked him because I thought he was going to be on my side and, you know, not give me such a rough go with the Russia investigation. I mean, if he fires Sessions or forces him out, I think it will be a huge loss to his base. I think his base is waking up when
it
comes
to
stuff like this.
What happens to his presidency? Forget about the base. Talk about his term. What happens if he fires Sessions?
If he fires Sessions, he loses support in the House and Senate among the GOP caucuses, whom he needs. He needs them to get his agenda through. Once he loses them and he loses the ability to make policy changes, which is why he was elected, to do things like undo Obamacare, smaller government, all that. If he loses the ability to do that, he loses the American people.
Does that further the obstruction of justice narrative in some way?
Yes, it does.
Well, it has to be Sessions fired, new AG, assistant AG fires Mueller, and then Betty bar the door. Then it's I think that is obvious.
Articles time.
Yes.
He's clearly trying to get Sessions to resign, putting all this pressure on him. He's not calling him in for a conversation. He's not firing him. He's just trying to force him to resign. And what I'm picking up from the shows that I watch and listen to is that Sessions is just digging his heels in, and he's not going to. He's just says, okay, I'm going to make you fire me because you know I gave up the Senate seat, and I was the first guy out there to put on that stupid red hat. And now you're throwing me under the bus, and I am not going to let you off that easily. And I admire him for that.
What does that say to all the other than senior members of the Trump cabinet or administration, right? If you cross me, I mean, Sessions was his guy. They were buddy buddies. He threw his career on the line for Donald Trump, and Donald Trump threw him out the door. What does that say to Reince Priebus and Paul Ryan or Rex Tillerson or I don't know, anybody but Jared?
Make sure your resume is up to date.
Oh, my gosh.
But also, I really think Trump does not understand the checks and balances that make our democracy work. I don't think he gets it because he doesn't see, and he didn't see with the firing of Comey, FBI director, that you are dismantling checks and balances that all Americans support, even your supporters who are such constitutionalists and purists. I really think he doesn't get the whole conflict of interest swirl that keeps coming with all of these tweets and like the Amazon and inserting himself in these. Maybe he thinks they're benign ways of communicating, but they're not. He's the president.
So now Scaramucci's going to carry the ball for him. The guy that stabs in the front, he says. What a nice way to describe yourself and the way you represent the administration. And
I can't get past all the pinky rings on that guy.
Oh, that's right. I guess he does have some bling, doesn't he?
Yeah, he feels a little bit Sopranos to me.
He looks beautiful. You can imagine him having a gin and tonic on the side of a tennis court with Jared and Ivanka. But
can you imagine him saying, what's it going to take to get you to drive out of this showroom with a car? That's what I think.
I agree. I think so, too.
But he is evidently in some sort of tussle with Reince Priebus now. And when Scaramucci said, we're going to get rid of this leaker, whoever the senior leakers are, and I think I know who they are, and then he specifically said at Reince Priebus. He's later backed away from that, but his words belie that.
There's a better part to that story, which is the thing he was complaining about were the financial documents of his that were out there. And those were public documents. They were on file. A reporter had to just go and
Politico FOI'd just said, wait, 30 days is up. We get the documents.
And they got the documents.
He's mad at Priebus for leaking them.
Leaking a public document.
Yeah. I mean,
and
I have a headache listening to all of this, listening to you talk about
and,
it.
And, of course, the bigger question is, who's going to go work for this guy now?
Scaramucci Trump?
Trump had trouble getting quality attorneys.
He had trouble getting a vice president to run with him.
I feel it's amazing to me, too, because Mike Pence is still the good little foot soldier. You know, I mean, he's wobbled a little bit. He's maybe backed away via a spokesperson, but he's still going to the Foxconn christening or announcement. He was on stage for the famous Boy Scout speech for crying out loud. Can't these people find another engagement? I would avoid a Donald Trump stage like the plague if I were
there. He can't. He's the vice president. His job really is to always protect his principal, and the principal is Donald Trump.
But, Kristen, when they make the movie, John McCain walks onto the Senate floor. He's wheeled in this movie, and and he's got bigger bandages, and he then does a Hollywood speech with Aaron Sorkin, Soaring Music, where he says, I know I'm a Republican, but you're not, sir. I cannot support this bill. But he didn't do that. McCain kind of let the team down, and they all continue to. Boy, as long as they're in that room, they're still doing his bidding.
I don't know. As we record, they're looking at the skinny repeal, right? This is their latest strategy. They have been unable to push anything else through the Senate. Now they're looking at this so-called skinny repeal, where they basically just get rid of the insurance mandate and maybe some of the device taxes. But they just they cherry-pick the couple of things about Obamacare that are particularly unpopular, and they want to repeal those, even though when you repeal those, you know, the bottom completely falls
out of the
insurance
market. Well, it's the financing
structure
of it, sure. Yeah. I mean, that's how the thing works.
So in a sense, you can put this bill forward, like, look, we're doing what everybody wants. Nobody wants to be forced to buy insurance. And then Obamacare will, in fact, collapse very quickly, too. And the premiums are going to go skyrocket.
Just one last thing for the record I want you guys to address, and that is the transgender tweets. The president, you know, what was bizarre about the transgender tweets is nobody was asking about should transgenders continue to serve in the military. But what really struck me as odd is the way he put it. Please be advised that. And then thank you at the end.
Yeah.
It wasn't sad. It wasn't bigly. It was thank you, as though he just tossed a grenade into the room and said, all right, you all clean up. Bye-bye now. And then he just steps out. Thank you very much.
Well,
and
it was the principal's announcement, right? You know.
What do you mean
attention,
by that?
Attention,
I know, it totally
and
felt...
cornbread and beans today in the cafeteria. Thank you for your attention.
It read like that. You're absolutely right, Scott. Kristen, did you see that one coming?
No, and I think this is... As much as I don't think Donald Trump is calculating in a way that benefits him, this felt calculated to me. He's losing his base. This is a diversion from what the Senate is doing. The Republican Party is crashing and burning because they can't do what they promised to do for 7 years. And I have one good thing to say about Donald Trump this week. I love that he's calling them out on it. I love that he's tweeting them.
The Republicans.
I love that he is trying to hold their feet to the fire, as they should be. People voted for Donald Trump in large part and flipped the Senate and the House to repeal Obamacare and to protect the Supreme Court. Those are the two biggest issues that I think drove people to the polls, Republicans in particular.
I think immigration has to figure in there, probably more than health care, but otherwise, yeah.
It could be, but I mean, how many of these GOP members of Congress at town halls. I mean, if I pulled every quote of them talking about the need to repeal, not take it apart, not tinker with it, not remove the mandate, repeal. That is what his base wanted. They didn't even really want replace. They wanted full repeal. And I mean, these are why you saw so many new people come out and vote for the first time ever and vote for Donald Trump, because they're sick and tired of this kind of BS, sending people to Washington and they don't do what they say they're going to do. And so if the Republicans lose the Senate, if a bunch of them lose seats in the House, they deserve it.
Yeah, but Kristen, when you actually poll people now, even Republicans now, about do you really want us to repeal Obamacare and not replace it with anything? Is that really what you want? Because this is what it's going to mean. Because it was really easy to say, let's repeal Obamacare, before anyone really did the CBO scores and talked about how many people were going to lose their health care and what it was actually
7 years,
going to mean.
Eric.
I know.
Seven years they've been talking about it.
No,
I don't
plan.
Even care what your position is on Obamacare. If you say you're going to do something, you better do it.
Through
and
three
you better
election
do it
cycles.
In this environment where you had all these people, like I was saying, that was Trump's base. That's why they picked him, because he was not the politician. And because they're tired of sending Republicans to Washington.
Then why aren't they getting it done, Kristen?
Because it's extremely hard to remove a benefit. And
maybe
so they shouldn't
have
made the promise in the first place.
Sure, that's
exactly
true.
Because people hate it. When they look at what's really going to happen, people hate it. They don't want this to happen.
Well, they're a lot like the dog that finally catches the car. They don't know what to do with it. You know, they've been chasing this thing for years, and all of a sudden they got it. And it's like, oh, whoa, whoa.
Right. Yeah. I think they thought Hillary Clinton was going to win so they could all go around and say whatever they wanted on the campaign trail and then not actually do it.
But as a practical matter, this is also on Donald Trump, because there's no value in hitching your wagon to this guy. I mean, he's made it so toxic. He's been so bizarre that doing his bidding is not an easy thing to do.
I think he's protected on this issue. He can't sign or veto or do anything to legislation that you can't get
as
to his desk.
As a factor of human nature, don't you think if he wanted to get those people to help him to get this thing passed, that he would have been kinder or less bizarre?
No.
He would have... Really? I mean, don't you think that's how you win friends and influence people? You're a little kinder, you're a little saner?
He helped it get out of the House. He actually did make a difference. I mean, if you believe what Paul Ryan says, and I do, that he did get on the phone and helped sway votes. He's kind of doing that in the Senate.
And then
he
turned around and said it was a mean bill. He got it out of the House, and then he threw all the guys who voted for it under the bus and said, well, we can't have that. It's
and then he calls out specific senators and said, you let America down. Maybe he believes, okay, is that an effective way to influence people. That's the thing that's amazing to me.
He is trying to hold them accountable for saying one thing and doing another. And so I absolutely think
some
that's
people
what
think
he's
you get more
how
flies
could Trump
with honey?
Of all people to hold people accountable for saying one thing and doing another?
I'm just saying when did you ever see a Democratic president call out Democrats for not doing what they said they're going to do? People are I support Trump calling them out. This is on Mitch McConnell. They elected all these people, poured all this money into races saying they're going to do this, and now they can't deliver.
So even if they realize it's a really bad and really unpopular idea, they should still do it?
Then they shouldn't have campaigned on it for 7 years.
That's right, they shouldn't
have. But I'm saying that there's a price to pay when you campaign on something and then you don't follow through.
And how many times in the House did they vote to repeal Obamacare?
20, 30, 40?
Yeah, it's like
40?
Some crazy number. Yeah. So, yes, they did. This is something you can't back away from, and they did.
Well,
so,
was
yeah.
it you that said last week, but there were no guns, no bullets in those?
It was not live ammunition they were playing with. Yeah, they were going to veto it. So.
School funding in the state of Illinois. So we have a bill.
Sorry.
For the record, because this is audio, that was not Kristen. That's Kristen's reaction to Trump talk. That's Scott Stantis' reaction to school funding talk in Illinois.
Sorry.
As my wife says, you elect a clown, you get a circus. And we may have that in the state of Illinois, and we may have that certainly in the United States government. But why are you sighing so heavily?
I'm sighing because, especially for Chicago schools, I mean, the dollar amount spent per student is going to go up because we've had a number of students leave, over 8,000 of them. And in fact, this increase in this budget that they're proposing, most of it goes towards teacher salaries that were promised in the contract.
So the governor should sign it?
No.
Well, I'm sorry. I thought you were saying that was in the deal.
Well, no, that's how this all comes down, is that this money isn't for the children. It's not for education. It's for the teachers' union. That's what this increase is for. And, you know, until we get our hands around something that CPS bonds are at junk level now. I mean, they're paying 8.5% interest on their bonds. This is criminal. And this is hurting children, truly. So when we get our hands around this, and maybe they'll declare bankruptcy and we can straighten everything out, I don't know. It's such a mess that pouring more money into it makes zero sense.
I disagree. I support this bill. I don't like that Chicago at the last minute got a couple of things inserted into it. And they did it. They did it at the midnight hour. They stuck in some extra money for CPS. But this is not about Chicago. And I know it's popular to talk about it that way. And it's easy for people to understand, like, oh, we're just pouring money down the drain over in Chicago. Chicago is the largest school district in the state. It has the highest concentration of poverty. And this is about the 267 districts outside of Chicago, downstate in rural Illinois, who have been starved under this funding formula. And the whole idea is to rebalance what is the largest gap in the nation between wealthy and poor districts. And if you keep focusing on Chicago, you're going to kill 25 years of two generations of kids who have gone through a system and been punished by their zip code. This attempts to fix it. And if we keep talking about Chicago, then it will die. But it's undeserving. This is a bill that is at least 3 years in the making. It's as close as you're going to get.
Okay, but I would also argue that per student spending isn't the arbiter of good of performance. It just isn't, because Chicago is one of the highest per students in the country. And our students perform terribly.
Well, that's true. But if you're going to look at Chicago, why aren't you opening up the books in some of these wealthy North Shore districts that are spending $25,000 per kid and don't need to? These are kids who come from, most of them, stable two-parent homes. They're not dealing with foster care. They're not transient. They're not like a lot of the kids in CPS who are living with aunts and grandmas and move around a lot and have huge truancy problems and don't come to school ready to learn. But we're spending $25,000 per kid in those other districts.
Well, but how fair is it if I work hard and I move into a district because it has good schools? And I've done that for my children. We sacrificed a little bit so we could live in a better school district. And they do put money in. It's better spent and better allocated.
It's not better spent, but continue. I understand your point.
Why would you say not?
Because nobody's putting a microscope under the – do you know what the superintendent contracts look like in some of these districts?
Oh, I'm sure they're crazy.
Do you know how much they pay their teachers?
No, but
and what
you,
those teacher and contracts and look big, like? And big, very, very but, generous.
Right, and their swing, students perform
and the big
better.
Swing pool that they build for these – I mean, what's that, Hinsdale? Did you write about that?
Yeah, they want to build, like, aquatic centers. I mean, they want these campus-like experiences for their kids, and I get your point. But nobody is taking money away from those districts and giving it to Chicago. That is a falsehood. every district under this bill keeps its money. And in those districts, like you're talking about, you have the ability to raise property taxes higher than the cap and higher than the levy if you want that kind of experience. I'm talking about districts that can't do that. They are taxing their people to the max, and they don't have business to lean on. They have, you know, a gas station on the corner and a dollar store, and that's how they're trying to fund their schools. It's not fair. We have the highest gap in the nation. We're an outlier. We should be paying attention to that.
Eric, talk for a second about then what Mike Madigan is doing and what the governor is doing about the timing of this bill.
Well, what happened is that this bill passed was in late May, I believe.
May 31st, last day of session,
and
7 p.m.
And the if you're keeping score at home, that's when it was. And the Democrats held on to it. They didn't send it to the governor. And you could make a case for doing that for a while because you wanted a little bit of the conversation to develop around it. You wanted some public debate. I don't see right now, and I haven't seen for a while, why they're still hanging on to the bill. They seem to be wanting to come right up to the brink. You know, the first school funding check, Kristen, is on your scorecard. I think it's August 10th, right? The first state funding has to
Yes,
come.
That was from one of our stories.
And we're pushing closer and closer to that deadline, and they're not sending the bill to Governor Rauner. Governor Rauner has said over and over again that he's going to issue an amendatory veto. And the Democrats aren't sending it to him. I think they've gone well beyond the reasonable strategic time where you could have held the bill back to facilitate conversation. Right now, it seems to be a really nasty game of brinkmanship.
The closer you get to the first day of school.
The governor is very frustrated, very angry about it. On the other hand, the governor is refusing to meet with the Democrats about it, too. It's like they're both behaving poorly here. But I do think that the Democrats, it's on them to get this bill, to at least get this process going. If the governor is going to veto it, he's not going to be talked out of it right now. So they've got to get it to him. Let him veto it.
Please clarify. He's amendatorily vetoing it. He's taking out a couple of the pieces that deal with the Chicago. He's not throwing everything out. He wants to use a scalpel. I will have to eat my words if that's not what he does, but I look forward to your column taking the Democratic leaders to task super important issue I'm sure you and a lot of other Democrats in the state really want to see happen.
I'm working on it as we speak, Kristen. Right, I took a break to come up here and mince with you.
I can't wait for the outrage, though. You're very tempered when it's the Democrats.
That's my adjective for next week is
tempered. The tempered Eric Zorn.
Anger.
No, the thing is, we have to get this process moving, and what gets it moving is Rauner issuing his mandatory veto, and let's continue to have it out. Because I don't know we're now speaking on Thursday morning. Senate President Cullerton is not going to send the bill, he said, to Governor Rauner until Monday. I don't know what we're going to gain in these next 4 days, but I don't think it's going to be anything. And so that's 4 days closer to the edge.
It's a delay tactic. It makes it more.
It doesn't.
You're holding school kids hostage,
Eric. Has anyone been watching Governor Rauner this couple of years? He's not the kind of guy who goes, oh, okay, I give up. I mean, that's just not his style.
Why don't they give it to him right away?
I don't know. I talked.
Because they're playing games, because they're petulant children.
You can admit
that's
that,
why.
Eric, right? I mean, that's not hard for you.
They're acting like.
I was on the phone yesterday for half an hour trying to understand this. Like, what am I missing here? Maybe there's a really good strategic reason for this. I don't see it.
And I actually tried to look up when in the past has the Senate held on to a bill because they're waiting to see that they want to have some control over what the governor is going to do to it. This doesn't happen. I think it happened once with the casino bill that they held on to it because Governor Quinn at the time said, I don't really like this. There's not enough protections. I'm probably going to veto it. But they waited a little bit, and then they sent it to him, and then he vetoed it.
Right.
So is a double standard against Rauner because everything that they will try to block him having any sort of a win. So that's what this is all about.
Can I just make the observation that this reminds me a little bit of the conversation and the point I was trying to make about the president, and that is that the stuff comes home. If you treat each other badly, then when you need some accommodation one side from the other, people are so disinterested, they're virtually incapable of doing it. I'm not saying that's all of it, but it doesn't help when they each treat each other so badly. When you become governor and then you don't have time to meet, or the speaker doesn't have time to meet with you, I guess we can't be surprised that they are so unwilling to work together on these things.
Whatever train wreck is going to occur. They ought to hasten it so that they can begin cleaning up after.
Oh, that's such a great quote, Eric. I love it.
All right, we'll leave on that then. You know, I was going to ask you guys about the Crosstown Classic, and since we've all been getting along so well.
Oh. John.
Today, particularly.
You've ruined
the view. Go, Cows, go.
Well, Kristen does have to go.
She just shot me a look.
We can do this in 90 seconds. My observation is not one team or another, but that it's not as relevant as it used to be. Used to seem really fun. I think the Cubs this year aren't fighting the Sox. They're fighting themselves. And so the outcome of this seems to be no more interesting than the Milwaukee series or Cleveland series.
I mean, the Sox aren't competitive this year, so.
They aren't, and the Cubs should be, but aren't competitive enough. And so well, it's not going to
be
the Sox.
They took a half-game lead in the Central.
First place, baby.
Yeah.
They filled this. They filled Sox Park last night. I mean, it was a sea of blue. I was surrounded by Cubs. It was not a very comfortable experience.
Boy, that's a
so
bad
I made
dream.
Sure to, as soon as I sat down in all of my Sox regalia, to let a couple Cubs fans know that they were in my seats. And I was very firm about it. And then they were nice the whole rest of the
game. You were.
I'm
shocked to hear that. So now let's let's talk about our recommendations for the week, something we're reading, eating, drinking, watching, listening to. What do you like this week?
I saw this headline this morning, and researchers at the Facebook Labs, have you heard this? They shut down the artificial intelligence because the artificial intelligence machines invented their own language, and we're speaking to each other. I'm not kidding. So I just want to go on record.
Oh, wow.
I want to go on record saying that I, for one, worship our new robot overlords.
That's right.
No, it's a great story, and it's fascinating.
Somebody once tweeted, I always say thank you to Siri because when the machines take over, I want them to know that I'm one of the nice ones.
This is a true story, and it's fascinating why and how these machines did what they did, but it's still terrifying, and they had to shut them down because they couldn't understand what they were saying to each other.
What do you like this week, Kristen?
My husband has started to get me into Outlanders. Have you guys ever talked about that? I can't, you know, I just feel your species, anytime there's a show with like women and cleavage and bustiers, it's like a must see. I don't find it to be all that
great. You're not enjoying
of television. It's okay. It's kind of predictable, and maybe we're just in season one. I'm not sure. Maybe it gets better, but
the backdrop of the story for those that don't know Outlanders is. What's it about?
This woman gets kind of pulled into a time warp, and she gets thrown back, 100 years, 150 years? And she's trying to get back to her husband. And
And she's a nurse, and she's working with Civil War. No, it's not Civil War. It's an old Scottish era, right?
Yes.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
Brenda and I watched that, and we just thought it was one of the most romantic, sexy
shows. You did?
Okay. Oh, and the heat between her and her husband, dude, was off the charts. You didn't think so?
No, I do. But again, I just when she starts to have this romantic relationship, you're just like, okay, you know this is going to happen. It's different from like Game of Thrones, which is completely unpredictable.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of nudity.
Holy cow. There's just some swell scenes in this. And it's not like the gratuitous sex scenes that you see in Game of Thrones, for instance, where they're doing sex position, you know. We enjoyed it.
I love how we get we always get on this topic during this podcast.
I'm just curious, what is it? If it's not gratuitous, what kind of is it? Just like naked land?
He said romantic. It's romantic. It's slow.
I think it is. But she's beautiful and he's handsome, and they go to it a couple times, and yet they argue with each other too. Eric, what are you recommending this week, Eric?
You know, mine is so comparatively nerdy. And it's another podcast. I hate to keep recommending other podcasts. People should listen to this podcast only. But
did you do this one at 1.5 or 2.0?
I do this one at double speed every morning. And it comes out every morning. I recommended Up First earlier, the NPR's podcast that comes out first thing in the morning. The New York Times puts out a podcast called The Daily.
Yeah.
It comes out also first thing in the morning. And between the two of them, it's a really good recap. The Times one's a little longer, a little more featurey, and it has Michael Barbaro calling up some various reporters and just talking through issues with them.
Does anybody get naked?
It's excellent.
I think they're all naked,
but it's audio, so I imagine them all naked anyway.
I believe last week I almost recommended Dunkirk. I know we've been talking about it a lot on the radio. We went to see it at the Music Box, which is the big 70mm film with the fantastic sound system. Everybody is loving Dunkirk. It did 50 million. It did more than all of the marquee movies this year in its first week. Couldn't have been more disappointed.
Really?
Wow. You know, they say you ought to study this a little bit before you go to see it. Yeah, they have zero interest in explaining to you why they're there, what's there. And there's so many opportunities lost in this movie. It almost comes across as smug to me. I don't know what everybody's jumping up and down.
Well, my favorite aspect of Dunkirk, real quick, and we've got to get back to Eric's, but USA Today reviewer bemoaned the fact that there were no women and no racial diversity in the cast.
Well, it is.
As there was in World War II troops, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
From British troops.
In France, yeah, right.
In France.
Yeah, really British.
Where
is,
are all the women on the front lines?
You know what you ask yourself, though, is there's 340,000 guys that were about to be slaughtered on that beach. Where's the panoramic shot of 340,000 guys? You don't see it. And why? Because they were surrounded by the evil Nazis and the tanks, and the Germans were going to get them. Germans make no appearance in this. And I'm thought, don't you show them, and then you show them, and then you go, oh, my God, what are we going to do? None of that. I'm not a director, but wow.
So thumbs down from Mr. Williams.
Kind of, yeah. Okay, that wraps it up. Eric Zorn, thank you. Chris McQuarrie, Run, Run, Run. Scott Stantis, the editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. I'm John Williams. Thank you, Ben, for being our engineer today, and Ella for producing The Mincing Rascals. We'll broadcast part of this on my Saturday morning show at 11:10. We'll drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNradio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.